When we talk about the creative process, what we're really talking about is the ability to connect dots and to make intuitive leaps. And sometimes those dots are previous projects we worked on or experiences we had, and sometimes they are from things we've read or studied along the way. Today, we're going to talk about the importance and value of reading to our creative process. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including the brand new book, The Motivation Code, available now wherever books are sold. Have you ever heard the phrase, leaders are readers? Probably so. It's a little bit reductive. I think not every leader I've encountered necessarily reads a ton, but I will say there is a decided pattern among people I encounter who are highly successful in their field of having a discipline in their life of reading, of studying, of absorbing the thoughts of others, of communing with great minds, as Stephen Zample, the former president of USC, put it. And I think if we want to have high quality stimuli to spark creative insights, to nurture intuitive leaps, we need to be intentional about putting those stimuli in our brain. But where do they come from? Well, they can come from a lot of things. It can come from experiences that we have. We can put ourselves in uncomfortable positions where we experience the world in a new way, and that can spark new ways of thinking. Or we can have a discipline in our life of regularly absorbing high-quality stimuli through reading. Today's guest is Jeff Brown. He is the author of a new book called Read to Lead and also the host of the Read to Lead podcast. And on today's show, he's going to share with us why reading is so important and how it can impact our lives, our leadership, and our creativity. I hope you enjoy this interview. It was a great joy to talk with Jeff. I've been on his show many times, and it was so fun to have him right here on The Accidental Creative. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jeff Brown. Well, I'm excited to welcome to the podcast today, Jeff Brown. This is a really interesting dynamic because I have been on his show, Read to Lead, multiple times for my books. And it is now my great privilege to welcome him to my show with his first book, which is appropriately titled Read to Lead. Jeff, welcome to The Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thank you so much, Todd, for having me. I think you know this. I first started listening to podcasts in 2007, 2008. My wife got me an iPod that year for our anniversary. And your podcast, The Accidental Creative, was one of the very first podcasts I ever started listening to. And, you know, 14 years later to be here, it's kind of surreal, I got to admit.
That's amazing. Well, you know, and it took commitment to listen to podcasts back in 2008. I mean, you had to like transfer files over FireWire, you know, it was an ordeal just to get it onto the device. And now you just, you know, push a button and like, read the lead. Okay, let me check that out. Right? Right. So it's a totally different thing. But the whole premise of your podcast, Read the Lead, has been, you know, the importance of reading specifically to people who want to go out and have an influence in the world. And I'm so glad to see that that is now been ported into book form after, you know, years and years of your show. How long has the show been around now?
8 years.
Okay, so a long time. You're a long timer. We could probably call you almost an OG in podcasting vernacular. And so I'm excited to have this conversation with you because, as you know, one of the consistent themes in my work has been the importance of reading and study and sharpening your mind and all of that. And people always ask me questions about methodology and, you know, well, how do I do it and what does it look like? And you have completely tackled that in this book. And so I can't wait to have this conversation with you. But before we jump into all the specifics and the tactics and all of that, I would love to just hear from you about your history with reading. You start a podcast called Read to Lead. You must love to read. Have you always loved to read?
Unfortunately, no. When I was a kid, I loved it. My mom brought that love out of me very young. I can remember, I just had this epiphany a month ago helping my mom move out of a house she'd been in for 59 years. And I stumbled across the Life Cycle Library, which was a set of books my mom got me and my brother when we were like 9 or 10. all about the birds and the bees. And I remember that as being like the first book club I was ever a part of. My mom would have us read out of the book, and then we would meet together at the end of the week and discuss what we'd learned.
Oh, how incredibly comfortable that must have been.
Yeah, not. Yeah, very. But I remember it fondly. But then, you know, at least in my experience, and I don't get me wrong, I love teachers. My sister's a teacher. But school taught me to just really dislike reading in large part because I was always having to read things that I did not enjoy. And so, you know, I went from graduating college to thinking, you know, thank goodness the learning is over. I just did not enjoy the learning process and reading in general. And it wasn't for another probably 10 years before I kind of reevaluated that. And it was because, or through the work of a guy I think we both consider quite highly, and that's Seth Godin. I was introduced to Purple Cow in about 2003. And Todd, I got to be honest, you know, I'm in my early 30s at that point, and I just was not aware of the value that was out there. I was not aware that I could essentially, you know, find someone who knew far more about a subject than I did, that I was fascinated by, that I was interested in, and I could essentially have a cup of coffee with that person, sit down and read their book, like having a cup of coffee with them, you know, one-to-one, and just learn so much. And that first book, Purple Cow, was sort of my introduction into that, embarrassingly, again, in my early 30s. And I just could not get enough. And I've been a voracious reader ever since.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Purple Cow and you mentioned Seth, because that was actually one of the first business books that I read. So we have that in common. He was somebody who profoundly impacted my life as well. He and David Allen as well was another one, you know, early on when I was first in a managerial role, and I was like, okay, how do I organize all this crazy stuff that I'm accountable for, responsible for? And, you know, Seth really sort of pushed me in a more of a sort of expand your mind and think differently kind of way. And then David would sort of help reel it all back in and put it all in a system that made sense and help me execute, you know. But it is, to your point, it's amazing the entree we have into the minds of so many brilliant people through books. And yet so many people don't take advantage of that opportunity, the privilege really that we have. I mean, so we have this embarrassment of riches, right? In books. Yes. So for those who maybe are kind of like you and I were maybe earlier in our lives or our career, where it was harder to find time to read, or we didn't really want to find time to read. What are some tips, some ideas, some practices for helping people develop a more consistent reading habit?
Yeah, I hear from a lot of people, Jeff, I want to read. I really do. I just don't have the time. I've got too many things going on in my life. And I'll often ask them a question, and that is, are you scheduling your reading time? And they'll look at me like I'm crazy. You mean like an appointment or a meeting? That's absolutely what I mean. Michael Hyatt says, what gets scheduled gets done. I'm a student of Michael Hyatt and his work, and I believe that wholeheartedly. Anything I actually want to have happen in my life, that I want to participate in, any habit that I want to practice, you could do a lot worse than beginning with actually putting it in your schedule. And the beauty of that is when you protect that time. And I do this every week. I sit down and decide, and I've got some, kind of some set times, but I'll determine at the beginning of the week, you know, what time do I want to set aside to read what it is I want to read. And then that way, when I begin, as the week progresses, and we all do, we start getting requests for our time. We didn't know we're going to be coming. I can look at my schedule and I can decide, I have a decision to make. I can go, well, I've got other times I can read, so I can give up this particular hour to read, to do that thing somebody wants me to do or participate in that activity. Or I can look at that time and go back to that person and say, you know what, I've got an appointment scheduled at that time. Can we do a different time? I think it's important to look at appointments with yourself when you make them, just as important as the ones with other people. And we often have this thing where we, when someone asks of our time, not that we shouldn't be helpful and participate and be spontaneous and all these kind of things, but oftentimes when someone asks for our time, our default is yes. And then if we say no, we feel like we have to defend the no to the other person.
Right.
And I think we need to learn how to default to no. And that if we're going to say yes, defend yes to ourselves. And so that's the first of several tips I could share, is schedule the time. Just a few others real quick. I think it's always important to have your next book in the queue. Know what your next one's going to be when you start the one you're beginning now, because you never know how quickly you're going to finish that book. You might get a chapter in and decide, this isn't what I thought it was. I want to move on. Well, have that next book at the ready. Examine your environment. Right behind me in my office is my reading chair. That chair is just for that purpose. I can close the door to the room. I've got a lap desk I can set out on the arms of the chair, be comfortable, put on my noise-canceling headphones, put on Focus at Will or some other app, and just really focus. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, share what you're reading as you're learning, as you're reading, whether that's face-to-face with somebody, whether that's on social media, and start a conversation. And those conversations will want to spur you on to read more consistently.
Mm. Yeah. I love, really, you could kind of distill that to three things, like a place, space, and ritual, right? Like a place,
I love it.
Space, and then like having that ritual of reading, that time set, you know, on your calendar, is so important to your point, because you can always find a reason not to do something like reading because it's not urgent. It's not something you have to do. And yet, it's the kind of thing you're always glad you did later. You know, people say that about exercising, like, I hate to exercise, but I love the feeling of having exercise. And I think for a lot of people, reading is one of those things, and it is for me, truthfully, even to this day. You know, I read every day. It's a part of my morning ritual. Mm. But even for me, sometimes I have to gear myself up into it. And then when I get 5 or 6 or 7 pages in, suddenly I realize, oh, my mind is firing. I'm enjoying this. I'm having ideas, insights, you know, and you sort of get swept up in it. But even for somebody who has seen the benefits for years and years, it takes some time to gear up into it. What are some of those benefits? Like, how has reading helped you? I know I certainly have my answers, but our audience is sick of hearing me talk about it. I only hear about you. What are some of the benefits you found from a regular reading habit?
Well, a lot of it for me has been mindset. And I think it's important to know that when you read, I used to think that everything I read in the nonfiction space, I had to then go and execute a set of to-dos once I read. And that's often the case. That can often be the case, depending on the kind of book you're reading. But I've also allowed myself, Todd, to read simply for how it impacts my thinking. I would say it's the books that I've read related to mindset issues that gave me the confidence to venture out on my own and be doing my own thing, making my own living these last 8 years. I was an employee for the first 26 or so years of my career. And for most of those years, could not imagine any other way to earn a living. But it was the books that I read that kind of brought me out of that box, if you will, lifted the veil on what was possible. And not to mention all the other things that books have done for me, both when I had a regular career and since then. I think back to my last radio job where I spent 13 years. I got promoted numerous times. And early on in that career, about 3 years in, was when I started reading that Seth Godin book. And that led to Jim Collins books and John Maxwell books and Liz Wiseman books and others, Pat Lencioni. And as I read more and more and implemented some of the things that I was reading and trying things, and around 2008, then social media comes about and I'm trying to figure that out for our station and how does that impact what we're doing and how can we more intimately connect with our listeners by using these tools. So I began reading about these things, and as I experimented, I got noticed. The things that I tried that didn't work quickly got forgotten, thankfully, but the things that I tried that worked got attention. And I started being asked to get in front of several different factions within the company, the programming department nationwide, the sales department nationwide, and teach them what I was learning. And that necessitated me reading books on public speaking, something I hadn't really done much of up until that point. And all kinds of angles you could approach that from delivery to putting together a talk, to slide your slides themselves and design and that sort of thing, to now, you know, more recently getting booked and paid to speak. And so all of those different experiences came about in large part for me because of that consistent habit that I had developed. Mm.
So one thing that I hear from people often is that they don't mind reading, but they can't really retain what they're reading, you know? And so for them, it feels like it's a futile thing, you know? Why read if I'm not going to remember anything I read anyway? And people think that they're just wired that way. But I mean, it's not, again, you know, we could sort of compare notes on our habits and our own proclivities when it comes to reading. But like I've struggled with that in the past until I sort of developed a system, right? For remembering things. What advice do you have for people who struggle to remember what they read. Because I think that's a big reason why people read, is they want to remember it and they want to be able to go out and execute on it or teach it to other people.
Yeah, I've tried so many different things, you might imagine, over the last 18 plus years being a voracious reader. And in the last few years, I feel like I've gotten this dialed in fairly well for me. And some of these tips may work for others, some of them may not. But one of them is I've changed how I take notes. I used to take notes as I went, and that involved, you know, reading a paragraph or two and stopping, taking notes on what I just read, and reading some more and taking notes, and back and forth. And my brain is, I think, constantly doing this switching of activities that I discovered over time impacted adversely my ability to retain things, oddly, and also greatly slowed down the process. And so what I do now is I sort of force myself to do nothing but write quick, easy symbols as I'm reading. Or in the case of, say, an ebook, using that highlighter function, or in the case of an audiobook, that bookmark function. So on a physical book, which is what I prefer, that would be an asterisk to remember something I want to go back to and dig into more deeply. Or it might be a question mark for something I'm not sure I understand, or maybe it's something I'm not sure I agree with. Or a cue for a quote that I thought was particularly pithy, and that sort of thing. And then once I'm done with an entire section, or optimally an entire chapter, only then do I go back through it, noting those markings, and then taking notes on those markings. And so that first 25 or 50 minutes, let's say, using the Pomodoro technique, if you will, and reading, is then followed by another 25 or maybe 50-minute session of note-taking, usually a 25-minute session of note-taking. So that, to me, that process of doing one thing and then only doing the other thing has been hugely impactful for my retention and my comprehension.
Hey, everyone, we're going to get back to the conversation with Jeff Brown in just a minute, including talking about the difference between physical books and audiobooks and ebooks and how our brain retains that information. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. Every human was born to create. Whether you last picked up a paintbrush yesterday or in grade school, you can explore your creativity and be inspired. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. One of the things that I love about Skillshare is that you can find a class to help you master any skill you want to master, even some of the softer skills like productivity. There's a great class called Simple Productivity, How to Accomplish More with Less, by one of our previous guests, Greg McEwen. You probably know him from Essentialism, his book Essentialism. And we also recently had him on the show to talk about his book Effortless. And you can take a course from him about how to accomplish more with less, called Simple Productivity. Again, that's Greg McEwen. You can find it right there on Skillshare. So whether you're a dabbler or a pro, a hobbyist or a master, you are creative. Discover what you can make with classes for every skill level and experience real improvement with hands-on projects and classes designed for real life. By the way, Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. So explore your creativity at skillshare.com/AC and get a 1 month free trial of premium membership. That's 1 month of a premium membership at skillshare.com/AC. This episode is also sponsored by Voices. So Voices is the world's number one creative services marketplace with over 2 million registered users. The working world has permanently changed to include more virtual and remote and hybrid work, and this is actually a very positive and powerful thing when it comes to completing projects and elevating your brand. So have you noticed that more and more friends and colleagues are turning to freelance marketplaces to meet their needs? And of course, you know the feeling of stress when you need something for a project deadline and you don't have it. Well, the future of work is freelance, and Voices is expanding the services offered on its platform to help you meet all of your creative project needs in one place. You know you'll get the voiceover, the translation, the audio production, the music composition services you need quickly when you use Voices. Get high-quality responses from a highly skilled talent in just a few hours, sometimes even in minutes, when you post a job. And Voices make sure there's no risk when you hire talent. With the exclusive SurePay service, your funds are only released once the final files have been delivered and you've given your seal of approval. And the choice is always yours when you use Voices to meet your creative needs. With a comprehensive platform of skilled professionals, you can rest assured that you'll find the right fit. When you hire for your creative needs using Voices, you'll never pay to post your job. And when you post your free job, you'll get quotes that fit your budget with custom responses. And with over 100 languages and accents to choose from, working with Voices gives you access to the diversity you need to make waves with your target audiences. Visit voices.com and post your job today. Again, that's voices.com and post your job today. And now back to our conversation with Jeff Brown. What has been your experience, or what does the research show about the difference between reading a physical book, which, by the way, I also prefer physical books for retention, and there's reason for me why that's the case, physical versus ebook versus audiobook? Have you experienced any differences there, or is there any advice you would give to people as it relates to those media?
Yeah, I certainly have personally. I know back in the day when I listened to audiobooks pretty consistently, it was because that was, in my view at the time, my only option. I was working a regular job. I had a 45 to 1 hour commute, and I thought, well, let me better leverage that commute time, right? And listen to books. I did that in addition to listening to the Accidental Creative Podcast. And so for me, that's a sort of a last resort, or if I'm on a plane and I want to just sit back and listen. Ebooks for me is tough. I own a Kindle. I've only owned it for a couple of years at the insistence of my wife, who said we're busting at the seams when it comes to books. But frankly, I've tried it, and it's my least favorite way to consume a book. There's just something for me, and I think this holds for a lot of people, about holding it in my hand, about physically being able to write in it the way you can with a physical book and a pen. And there's something too, for me, spatially. I've read research on this about, you know, with a physical book, we open it up and we've got a left page and we've got a right hand page, right?
Right.
We don't have that with an ebook. We obviously don't have that with an audiobook. And so as I'm reading and I'm thinking back, oh, this reminds me of something the author said earlier. And I think back to, we visualize that page. We see which side of the book it's on. We see where height-wise on the page it falls. Is it the top, the middle, the bottom? And so there's just something spatially for me about having that physical book in your hands that makes a world of difference when it comes to just how I interact with the book. And then that leads to better retention and better, I think, comprehension.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of research actually about that exact thing, right? That you remember things in physical form more so than when you're reading them digitally, because there's a sense of place and space and all of those things, right? That you like, oh, I remember this was on the upper left-hand side of the left page or whatever. You can place it, which makes it easier to retain for some reason. I am a huge fan of audiobooks. I listen to a ton of audiobooks when I'm walking or when I'm running, because it increases my reading time. So like, for example, I'm right now about 3/4 of the way through Grant by Ron Chernow, the biography of U.S. Grant. And truthfully, I'm probably not finding the time to sit down and read a book that thick. You know, it's like the audiobook, I think, is 30 hours or something. That's a biography. But I love listening to biographies because for me, it feels like somebody's telling me a story. Whereas for things like business books or things that are more technical in nature, tactical or strategic in nature that I'm reading, or things that require a lot more thought, I prefer physical books. And I'll sit down and I'll read, because then, like you said, I can interact with them. I can take notes. I can, you know, put question marks or like little deltas if it's an action step or something. So for me, that's sort of how I parse it, is if it's something I'm listening to, sort of like I would listen to a podcast, somebody telling me a story, great, audiobook's fine. But if it's anything I'm going to apply later, then I typically try to do a physical book.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because it does for me really depend on the kind of book. If I'm reading a book mostly for pleasure, and that's usually the books that fall in between the ones I'm reading for the podcast, right, then I'll be much more apt to listen to it, or be okay, if you will, with listening to it versus the physical book. So yeah, it does for me too depend on the type of book, whether it's pleasure, utility, something else.
Yeah. Virtue. That's one thing I love about your show, by the way, is that it's very clear to me that you read the books of the authors that you're interviewing. As an author, that's very, I really appreciate that, right? Because I've been on a few shows where they will say something to the effect of like, so what's this book about? I'm like, well, it's your show, it's your audience. Why are you asking me that question? Like, you should be advocating for the audience, right?
Right, anyway. Right.
So I would love, first of all, congrats on the book. Very excited to get this out into the world. I think it's going to be a tremendous tool for people who want to grow and stretch themselves and learn new things. I can't let you go without asking you about your podcast, because you've been interviewing people at the top of their game now for over 8 years, which is incredible. And I have to imagine that there have been some things that have really stuck with you, maybe some patterns, some ideas that have stuck with you over that time. And so I think it would be a huge disservice to our audience to let you go without asking you, what are some of the key things that you've discovered over the course of your time interviewing some of these top performers and top authors on your show?
Great question. Yeah, I would narrow that down to about five things as I've sifted through 380-ish, almost 400 different interviews. And it would be interesting to hear if you identify with these five things that nearly, as best as I can determine, most of my guests practice. And it's an acronym. I call it, you know, Dream Big, D-R-E-A-M. And the D is this idea of learning how to dance with this discomfort and pushing yourself outside your comfort zone on a daily basis. I used to not have an understanding of how valuable that was, of stretching yourself, of surrounding yourself with people who push you to stretch yourself. The R in that acronym is you're probably not surprised to hear, is to ritualize or re-engage, if you need to, with reading. We've talked enough about that one already. Absolutely. The E is examining your energy. And so in the last couple of years, I've learned to really sort of survey my schedule through the lens of energy. And so I take everything, I do an audit every so often, and I take everything I'm doing. And if it's something that zaps my energy, I color it red on my calendar. If it's something that gives me energy, I color it green. If it's neither here nor there, if it's sort of indifferent with regards to energy, I color it orange. And then I take a step back and sort of a 30,000-foot view and go, okay, is there too much red? What can we do about that if there is? Or if there's maybe not a lot of red necessarily, but what red there is back to back to back, what can I do to change that? And it's really changed how I experience my week and my schedule.
Yeah.
The A is assemble your advisors. That's all about, you know, being a part of a mastermind group, let's say, or having a personal board of advisors. And like I was saying before, people who push you outside your comfort zone. And that M is just the value of mastering your mornings, to pour into yourself and take some time for self-care, whether that's an hour or 3 hours or whatever, before you start your day, because that's just going to make you a far better person for everybody who interacts with you for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I love that. You know, one of the things that makes me think of, Jeff, is you know, almost every successful person I interview has a system of some sort. Mm-hmm. They have, if you ask them, very rarely do they say, "Oh, I don't know, I just wake up and see what the day brings at me." You know, no, they organize what they can organize so that they can deal with the uncertainty of what they can't organize, which is often the work or the problems they're solving or things of that nature. But they try to organize the things they can, so that they're they have more bandwidth to deal with the things that they can't control or organize. And so what I love about what you just shared is, you know, really this is all about having some system in place to help you tackle the important work or tackle the important things in your life that you're trying to achieve.
Yes, absolutely.
So how do, like, let's say that, because I know we have a lot of leaders who are listening to this show, how do we encourage other people to read? You know, we've all probably had that manager. I know I've had that manager in the past who just shoves a book in your hand. You know, I have a friend I used to work with who called himself a book bully, because he would always, you know, shove books in people's hands and say, "You've got to read this." And then he would follow up every week, like, "Have you read it yet? Have you read it yet?" Nobody wants to be that person, but how do we encourage people around us to connect with the insights that we're achieving through our reading?
Yeah, I think one of the ways you can impact people who are direct reports or people you work alongside or people that you interact with on a semi-regular basis is to let them catch you doing it. I used to have a boss, a leader at my last job who the book is in part dedicated to. He and Seth Godin, who together brought back to me my love for reading. And he was great about this. I remember early on in that job, a couple of years before he started a book club within the office, he was always at his desk reading. And that was never viewed as something as, "Oh, he's goofing off," or "He's wasting time," or "He's not doing his job." And he encouraged that in the others around him. so much as to go far give us a book allowance, so that, you know, once a month or once a week we could say, hey, I think I want to check out this book. It relates to my job this way. He'd say, go get it. We'll pay for it.
Yeah.
And that just that led naturally to a book club later on down the line, and each of us coming together to read a single book, whereas up to that point we had been reading books relevant to what we alone were doing.
Yeah.
Within the company or within our career. So that simple act of just being caught doing it and demonstrating that it's something that you value seems to just naturally prompt other people to want to know more about why you value that so highly.
I love that. And I also find that when you make reading accessible to people, one of the things I would do in leading a team was I would photocopy. Oh, I probably shouldn't say this because then it's probably not legal to do that, but I would photocopy just like three or four pages of a book or you know, whatever. And I would highlight certain things and just give those out to people and say, hey, just read these couple of pages. I just want you to I want to see what you think about this. And that was a way to kind of hook them into the concepts in the book. Because they're not going to read a whole book, nor are they necessarily going to glean the same insights that I want them to have if they do read the book. But if I just give them a couple of easily digestible things, yeah, that might hook them in. We can pull them into the cult of reading if we do it that way. So, well, Jeff,
all this part is, of my evil plan.
Yes, that's right. Plan for world domination, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We get everybody to read, and then we get them all to read my book. That's what we do. Yeah. Well, Jeff, this has been a real joy. It's so fun to be on the other side of the microphone from you. And if people want to know more about the book Read to Lead or the podcast Read to Lead or just Jeff Brown, if they want to stalk you, they just want to come stalk you, what's the best place for them to find you?
Well, thanks for asking that and allowing me to share that. I appreciate it, Todd. I don't take that for granted. If you're hearing this, say, after August 31st, 2021, you can grab a free chapter of the book by going to readtoleadbook.com. You can kick the tires first if you want to. If this is before August 31st, you can get the book for 40% off, and you can also get $500 in additional resources when you go to readtoleadbook.com. The podcast is at readtoleadpodcast.com, and that's my main website where you'll find me hanging out every week with a new author.
Including probably five episodes with me. So
something like that. Yeah.
If I calculated, I could probably figure out what percentage of your guests I have been over time. If you've done 400 and I'm five of them, I'm not that quick with math, but anyway, Jeff, it is such a joy to speak with you. It's good to see you again. I know they can't see you, but I can see you. It's just so good to see you. And I'm really excited for this book. And I think the freedom and clarity it's going to bring to those who interact with it. So thank you so much.
Thank you again for having me, Todd. Surreal to be here. It's one of the highlights of my career, and I'm not saying that in jest. I really mean it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jeff Brown as much as I did. Again, the book is called Read to Lead. I hope that it encourages you, I know it has me, to be more purposeful about reading, how I approach reading in my day-to-day life. Hey, we need some questions for upcoming episodes of the show. Just go to accidentalcreative.com/question. to ask a question. Maybe it'll be played back right here on the show. Also, jump on the weekly newsletter, Three Things. It goes out every Sunday. Go to accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. The Accidental Creative is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen to more fine shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.